Hey, welcome back, everybody, to another edition of the Hometown Hero. This is Tom McNew here on the Armor of God Catholic Radio Network. And I've got a special guest here joining us this afternoon, Coach Charles Bowles, who is an instructor over at St. Mary's Catholic School in Taylor. Coach Bowles has, like a lot of Texas high school football coaches, been in a bunch of different schools around the state and around the Republic. And sure, we'll talk a little bit about some of those particular stops along the way, but we'll really want to spend some time and dive into a different aspect of Coach Bowles' life. Although I'm sure we could talk high school football for days, and that would be interesting for me. It may not be interesting for everybody else, but different little aspect of Coach Bowles' life as an author who has written a great book. It's called Working for That Warm Feeling, which is an interesting title, and we'll get into that a little bit here in a minute. But the book's a little bit about Coach Bowles as growing up as a youngster in East Texas, as a high school football coach, of course, and most importantly, I think, as a cancer survivor. And we're gonna dive into a lot of those different aspects here. So, Coach, thanks for joining us here on the Hometown Hero.
Well, thank you for having me. This is a great pleasure of mine.
So, give us a little bit of, well, let me back up. First and foremost, I don't want to spoil any of the stories or the aspects of the book. I really want folks to go out there and get a copy of it for themselves, and we'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute. And as I was telling Coach before we went live, if this were TV and not radio, you could see that my book is literally covered with sticky notes and dog ears and underlines, and we could spend hours talking about this. But we're going to squeeze it into the next 30 minutes here, our conversation about that. But Coach, please introduce yourself to all of our listeners.
Sure. My name is Charles Bowles. I've been a, as we've discussed already, as Thomas said, I've been a coach in the state of Texas for a long, long time. I'm actually in my 31st year of education here at St. Mary's in Taylor. Absolutely love my job and love my what I do for a living. It's incredibly rewarding, and I think that's a big part of why I wrote this book, and we'll get to that in a little bit. But one thing I love about my job is it makes me feel like I'm doing something that's important, that's worthwhile, and something that I think, oh, I don't know, just gives me a good feeling on the inside, and we'll get to that in a minute too. A warm feeling. No, so I'm married. I've been married for 33 years. Got four grown kids. Four grandchildren with one on the way. We've got
Congratulations.
thank you, thank you. I spent some time in Temple. I'll go ahead and throw that out there because I know a lot of your listeners are from the Temple area. I coached at Holy Trinity there in Temple and at St. Mary's in Temple. All my children attended school there. So that was a great time for us. So, as you said earlier, my career has taken me all over the state of Texas, and just like a typical high school coach, I've been everywhere, man. Like Johnny
Yeah.
Cash said,
It's been everywhere.
I've pretty much covered every road in the state of Texas. So I've been all over the place. So having said all that, like I said a second ago, and I know you're fixing to ask me the question, what in the world made an old football coach want to sit down and write a book, right? I'll just jump right in that. It's a very interesting story. Trust me, if somebody would ask me 10 years ago why I wrote it, or somebody would have told me 10 years ago that you were going to write a book, I would have told them that they need to be checked out by the nearest medical professional. Life has strange twists and turns. So back I started my first battle with cancer was in 1997. I had Hodgkin's lymphoma. Then went through tons of radiation, more radiation than a person should have gotten. But back then, the doctors knew they could kill lymphoma, so they killed the heck out of it. And so then it came back in 2003. I'm sorry, 2004. And when it came back, This time is obviously a lot more serious, and had to go down to MD Anderson and get a lot of chemotherapy there. I had to have surgery to remove the tumors on my spleen. Went through all of that and everything was okay. Then it came back in 2022, this time in the form of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. And a lot of the theory at that time, or right now, is the thought that possibly that it could have been caused, the non-Hodgkin's lymphoma was caused by the treatment for Hodgkin's lymphoma. And so in 2022, the first treatment didn't work. Second treatment didn't work. Third treatment didn't work. So we were starting to get pretty worried. And I'm trying to talk fast and cover a lot of this. I could go into great detail, obviously. But so when I was going through a clinical trial, still trying to find a treatment that would actually work, I contracted COVID. I was still trying to be an athletic director. I was out in, you know where this is at. I was out in Water Valley,
Water
Texas.
Valley. Yep.
And one of my good friend's son was playing in a basketball game, and of course I wanted to go to the basketball game, and I was all excited about it. And of course, I'm first time I'd been back to school in a long time, and I'm hugging everybody and high-fiving and doing all that stuff, and I got COVID.
Petri dish.
In a petri dish. And so I got COVID, and I have people that don't know lymphoma attacks your immune system. And so I already had a compromised immune system plus all the chemotherapy that I was on at the time. And so that COVID pretty much wiped me out, and it was scary. So that March, my doctors called me in, and it was like a scene from the movie Intervention, or from the show Intervention, where all the folks are standing around and they're saying, okay, now if you don't stop smoking crack cocaine, we're going to kick you out of the house. But this time they sat down and said, you have to get out of education. You can't continue to do this. You can't be in the classroom. And really and truly, I was quarantined for about a year. But I had to get out of education. Well, for a guy that felt like his calling was to be an educator, and that was really a big part of my identity, that was pretty devastating for me. And I think my doctor recognized that I was becoming depressed, and he was worried that it was going to affect me in a very negative way. Although I'm a very positive person, he was worried, and he told me at that time, you need to sit down and write a book. Of course, I told him that he was probably a little bit off his rocker. But I started thinking about it, and the seed got planted. And I started thinking about what in the world would I write a book about? Well, that seed just got planted, and it grew, and it got fed. And over time, I started to realize, well, I do think I have a pretty interesting story. And so here's my biggest motivation. Number one is number two is I wanted to do something that was worthwhile. And that was what my doctor was trying to get me to do, something that was just as fulfilling and just as rewarding as what I was doing in education. But the number one reason was, and I try to tell the story without getting overly emotional. So if I get overly emotional, I'm going to fight it off this time. If I do, just bear with me.
We'll
But
be all right.
my family and everybody, we didn't know if I was going to make it or not. And I wanted to leave a legacy of why I'm the person I am. I consider myself the happiest person on this planet, and I wanted my children to know where that came from. My children never got to meet my mother or my grandmother, who you read about in the book, who were amazing human beings. And I wanted my children to know who they were. And the best way I could think about doing that was putting it on paper. But also I wanted them to think about, there's some life lessons that I never got a chance to explain to my children. And so I wanted to get that on paper, and I wanted to understand why Dad was the way Dad was. So that was so when I wrote the book, and you can attest to this, I hope you picked up on it. I hope it read like I was re telling a story to my children.
That was exactly the first note I had written in here was, I feel like one of your kids and I'm sitting on your lap as I'm reading this, So,
Well, good. Mission accomplished.
Let me back up just a little bit, Coach. And so for those of us that are not as informed, what's really the difference between Hodgkin's lymphoma and non-Hodgkin's lymphoma?
I'm not a great medical expert. It's really just the type of cell
Okay.
that the cancer grows and how it manifests and how it spreads through the body.
Yeah.
So
Okay.
I know that the non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, what I have right now, is not curable, which is I'm okay with that. I'm gonna fight it every day, and I'm gonna keep living life every day. So, but the Hodgkin's lymphoma had been cured, so I was done with that.
Okay.
So.
Okay. Yeah, one of the things that that I picked up besides kind of the everybody sitting around the living room while you told these stories, kind of structure of the book. One of the very first things I wrote in here was, this book is all about choices, and the choices that were thrust upon you as a young man, and the choices that you made, and the people around you. I think your grandmother probably was number one on that list of
Amen.
making sure that that not only did you understand the ramifications of the choices that you were presented with, but helped you understand that making those choices was going to have implications for you years and years down the road.
Yeah, amen. Yeah.
Yeah, and so can you talk a little bit about that aspect?
Yeah, and I agree with you 100%, and I'll be the first one to say I didn't always make the right choices.
None of us ever did.
No, but I can promise you I knew what the right choice was in every situation, and that was a testament to the people that raised me and the people that I was surrounded by. And so yes, I do believe we have a choice every single day in our lives of the number one thing I talk about is choosing to be happy. And that's it seems like such a simple thing, but we all have gotten caught up in those traps where we choose to be angry, we choose to be to be malicious, we choose to break people down instead of building people up. And I really do try to make a conscious decision, and I want my children to make a conscious decision to build people up around them and to be happy and to be a good person. And it seems like a simple thing, but life sometimes has other ideas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing that I found interesting is you kind of, talked about some of your early years here is that another interesting facet of Charles Bowles is sometimes you're hard-headed. And you openly admit that you are hard-headed. And even having your mother and your grandmother, like you said, present the good and the bad of those choices. You still sometimes, again, I think like a lot of us, drove on with what your hard-headed nature decided you were going to do in the first place.
Yeah. My greatest example of that is when I talk about my journey with cancer. I will say this with all honesty. I really think me getting cancer was the most important thing that's ever happened in my life. And I wouldn't say it's the best thing that's happened in my life, but it is the most important thing that's happened to me in my life. It helped me form my shape. It helped me, I mean, form my faith and shape my faith and help me to have a better understanding of my faith and my purpose in life. But I was so hard-headed, God had to give it to me three times before I learned my lesson.
Yeah, I think every one of us could kind of look back at our lives, and we had those moments where we kind of all got hit across the head with the same brick more than once.
Yeah, I've got the bruises to prove it.
So why would you want folks to read this book?
Well, okay, so let me back that back up. I did not read that book for other folks to read. I mean, I didn't write that book for
Right.
other folks to read. I wrote that book for my children to read. I
Okay.
really had no intention of ever having it published, and as fate would have it, some other folks thought that it ought to be published and ought to be put out there. So when I wrote it again, I wasn't thinking about other people reading it. But now, again, the re so to go back to answer your question, I'm not special. in the fact that I've got I'm presenting some great words of wisdom. There, I don't think there's anything profound in my book, and I don't want to undersell it. I think people can relate to it because I'm talking from a very country point of view. You know, I'm just an old football coach, and I love to teach, and I love my family, and I think a lot of people can relate to that, and they can look at it and go, okay, you know, life sometimes dealt me a bad hand. Well, let me see if I can make the best play out of that hand, and instead of making it worse.
Yeah, and I think that's another a very interesting aspect is again, I wrote down a whole bunch of things that I picked up from the book, but you hit a lot about discipline. And learning from others, and then also learning from yourself, and as you said, through your faith and just through the environment that was presented to you. Talk a little bit about how, what you would want other people to know about the importance of discipline.
Well, we all need a framework in order to live and in order to be successful. We got to be able to work within rules and all that stuff. But for me, when I go back to my earliest years of discipline being provided for me, discipline provided me for me a security blanket. It provided me the trust of my elders, the trust of the authority in my life, that I knew they were looking out for my best interest. Now, I just like any other kid, I didn't want it at the time. But over time, I realized how important it was to me. And I didn't realize it till probably I got into high school that I thrived off of very disciplined environments and very structured situations because it made me feel comfortable. It made me feel secure. And so as a teacher and as a coach and as a dad, I tried to provide that as much as I possibly could because I knew what kind of comfort that gave me, and I knew I tried to provide that to the children that I interacted with.
And I would venture to guess that that's kind of been a hallmark of your educational background as well.
And you know, I just like any other teacher and coach, I probably have some regrets for going too far with discipline. You know, I also try to think that I go too far with spoiling kids too, but yes, it was a hallmark of my program that we were very structured, disciplined. That ship was everybody knew their job on the ship, and everybody knew how to execute that job, and that hopefully, I like to think that that produced a lot of success for us.
I think that's an important aspect too, that there are different, everybody has a different role.
Yes.
There's people that are in the bottom of the ship that are pulling on the oars, and then there's guys that are pulling on the ropes to raise the sails, and then somebody's
And then
got to
there's
be there
guy.
to hold the rudder and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, not everybody can steer the ship, you know, but that guy steering the ship has got an important role too. So, you know, it's funny. You want to segue into the title of the book?
Yeah, exactly. That was my next question. Actually, I want to back up one more thing because you made a quote in here that is something that I have been saying for years, that there is no such thing as a good switch.
And those of you that haven't read my book, he's not talking about a light switch.
No, no.
He's talking about a branch off of a tree. Yeah, that was a big part of my discipline.
I'll just leave that out there, and everybody who's who goes and picks up the book can talk can read and discover that for themselves. But I did get a kick out of that piece of
The joy of my grandmother and her switch.
So let's talk then. So how did working for that warm feeling, how did that develop as the title of your book?
Very good. So when I wrote my book, and this is interesting for folks too, and I wrote that intro in one day. So I said I thought about it and thought about it and thought about it, and it was about a 10-page introduction. And I sat down and wrote that, and then I didn't touch the book for 2 months. Didn't write a word. All I did was think about how I wanted to structure my book, and I would go walking every day, and I would listen to music every day, and I would get ideas, and I would jot the ideas down, but I didn't type anything. When I sat down to type the book, I wrote the whole thing in 3 weeks. It just flowed out of me like water, like I was telling a story.
I bet.
And so that was a lot of fun. So going back to the intro, Growing up as a high school athlete in a very high school town, a very football town, excuse me, a very football town, I was a quarterback, and I thought I was a dadgum good quarterback. And I had started every game my 7th grade year, and this is at a 5A school, seventh grade, 8th grade, 9th grade, 10th grade, started every game at quarterback and was a pretty good quarterback. Well, I get to my junior year and I was not the starting quarterback, which I was okay with that. The guy that started in front of me was the guy who went on to Rice and played full scholarship football at Rice. Well, the quarterback before him got drafted by the Cincinnati Reds to play pro baseball. The quarterback before him went to the University of Arkansas, played running back at Arkansas. The quarterback before him went to Louisiana Tech and was played quarterback and pitched on at Louisiana Tech on their baseball team. All right.
Pretty good line there.
So here I was thinking, I'm next.
Yeah.
I'm the next big time quarterback to come out of my hometown. So we get to the spring of my junior year and we had a coaching change. And the head coach comes in, first time I met him, and tells me that he does not see me as being a quarterback ever again, that I need to be an offensive lineman. And of course, if folks that don't know anything about football, you don't understand this. Anybody that knows anything about football knows how devastating that would be
Yeah.
for a 17-year-old athlete. So I was frustrated and angry, and I told him, no, I'm not just a quarterback, I'm the quarterback, and I'm a good one, and just you wait and see. So he told me, no, that's just not his plan, that's not his vision for our football team. Well, we get to the first day of spring football practice, and I go with the quarterback group just like I did every single practice, and I'm warming up, and he comes and grabs me and says, no, you're over there with the offensive lineman. So I was a dutiful soldier. I was never would have talked back to my coaches and never would have argued. I did my job. We finished practice. I'm walking off the practice field, and he can tell I was upset. And I was, be honest with you, I was crying. And it wasn't because I was sad. I was mad, like balling up my fists, getting ready to go to town on somebody. He puts his arm around me, and where he's walking off the field to tell me again all his thoughts about what he needed out of me. And the great thing, in retrospect, going back and looking at it, he was such a good man. His name is James Cameron, and he said that he never said anything about my lack of ability to play quarterback. He just talked about how great of an offensive lineman I can be in his system. And so anyway, and of course I wasn't listening to any of it. So we get to the end of the conversation and he says, okay, Bowles, listen to me. He said, playing offensive line is like peeing in your pants when you're wearing dark pants. He said, nobody will ever notice that you've done it, but if you do the job right, you'll always get a warm feeling.
Yeah.
So of course I looked at him like he had three eyeballs, and I was mad, and it didn't make me feel any better. But I went home, talked to my mom about it, and spent a long time talking to my mom about it. And we talked about that saying, working for that warm feeling, and it really became I don't know, kind of like a family motto. It became a way of life. The idea that you don't have to be the hero all the time. You don't have to be the guy steering the ship. You don't have to be, sometimes you can be just as important being out of the limelight without having your name in the newspaper and still get a warm feeling just because you're doing something good for somebody else. And that was the life lesson I learned, and I think it goes perfectly with the book.
Yeah, and I think that really kind of encapsulates a theme that runs through the book, is this kind of the servant heart,
Amen.
and servant
Amen.
mentality that it, I mean, you can't read two paragraphs of this book and not pick that up as a
Fantastic.
characteristic of you and your life, and your reaction to three different diagnoses of cancer. That's gotta kind of shake the foundations here, of everything.
And the cancer diagnosis, it's funny. I'll say this, I've said this before, and I'll say it again. It was tougher on my family than what is ever on me, because I have a very unique ability, and you can pick that up in the book. I'm a rose-colored glasses guy. I had the ability to find the good in every situation, I have also had the ability just to put my head down and go to work. So I felt like, okay, doc, give me the, here's the treatment plan. Let's get to work. And I don't dwell on it a whole lot. But this last time, that was shaking. I was scared. I was worried. It was a tough time for me. But again, this book helped me get through it. Just sitting down and writing this book was very rewarding. It helped me get through it.
Coach, we got just a couple minutes left here in our show, but I want to kind of jump to kind of some final thoughts. And folks that know me have heard me tell this story that when I got commissioned as a brand new second lieutenant, we had a old crusty gray-haired general who said to us, "Hey, you're going to get a canteen cup of water every morning, and you have to shave your face and wash your backside and drink your cup of coffee, and you have to do it in the right order." And so as I'm reading your kind of at the very end of the final thoughts here, it said, "This is a story about hot water and coffee." That kind of made me chuckle a little bit. So again, can explain what you mean by the hot water and coffee analogies?
Well, I start off in the book talking about, sometimes we're a piece of bread that needs to be toasted a little bit. Or a tortilla that needs to be thrown on the grill for a little bit, that little bit of heat kind of changes and makes us into a better person. And I firmly believe that the adversity that we're given, and it's through God, and it's through our faith, and we trust God is doing that to make us better peace people and to bring us closer to Him. So in the last chapter, I kind of go full circle with it. And I talk about how coffee, when life does different things to us. And we can talk about, I think I'll talk about the analogy of an egg. So an egg, when an egg is exposed to heat, it changes its structure, it changes what it is, and it becomes a different thing. But when ground coffee, and this, I thought it was a great analogy. I wish I claimed it, but I can't claim it. I read it somewhere. But when ground coffee is exposed to hot water, the coffee changes the water. And the coffee changes its environment. And that was my call to my children at the end of my book is go out and be a positive change in the world. Don't let the world change you. You change the world and make the world a better place, like a cup of warm coffee.
That's a great way to end our conversation there, Coach. Thank you very much for taking some time out of your busy schedule. And where can folks pick up a copy of your book?
Oh, you can go just go to Amazon.com and type in "Working for That Warm Feeling" and order yourself a book. If and I can provide on your website if you'd like. If somebody would like a signed copy, they can email me and I'll mail them a signed copy. No problem at all.
That's great. We will definitely make that happen, and we'll put a link to that in our show notes. Coach Charles Bowles, thank you very much for joining us here on the Hometown Hero, and God bless you, my friend.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. This has been a great pleasure.
Y'all check us out next week here on the Armor of God Catholic Radio Network, and God bless.